Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. This is Johnny Tan, author of From My Mama's Kitchen, Food for the Soul Recipes for Living. Welcome to my weekly From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio show. My guest for this morning is Carolyn Daglish. She is the founder of Systems for Sensory Kids. It is a leading-edge organizing model that bridges the gap between clinical support and practical in-home solutions for rigid, anxious, and distracted kids. Carolyn and I will be discussing about her new book titled The Sensory Child Gets Organized. Good morning, Carolyn.
Good morning, Johnny. Thanks for having me.
I'm delighted to have you on the air with me. This is a wonderful topic for us to talk about this morning. The Sensory Child Gets Organized is an awesome book. It is a very easy read, very thorough, and well-organized, I might say. Congratulations.
Thank you very much. It was really a labor of love for me, and it was a pleasure to be able to write this book for parents.
Well, I understand that this book came from your personal experience as well, so that's wonderful. Let us start by getting to know you a little better. So give us a quick walkthrough of your life from childhood to the present moment.
I'd love to. So I actually grew up in Providence, Rhode Island, which, believe it or not, is where I still am. I was the middle child of a fantastic family, and I went to college and I got a bachelor's in psychology, which was really what I was intending to do with my life. Mm-hmm. And as life can sometimes change, my professional career ended up veering away from psychology and focused more on sales and management. And so I spent about 11 years in sales, customer service management, and executive recruiting with kind of both small businesses and larger Fortune 500 companies. So I got this really great exposure of both worlds. And then I shifted into getting married and having a family and raising my own children. And when I was looking to get back into the workforce, I stumbled upon professional organizing, and it ended up being a great fit for me.
That's interesting. Were you very organized when you were a child?
I was. That's a great question. I was always very organized. And probably it was always something that supported kind of my own challenges of being someone who was prone to being a worrier and prone to being easily overwhelmed. And thankfully, I grew up in a family who provided a lot of structure, and that was very natural for me to fall into those tools. So they've always been something that have supported me.
You were working in corporate America and so forth. So what other life experiences led you to become a professional organizer?
Well, you know, it really was such this perfect combination of my professional experience and my real interest in psychology. And then that was really what started me down the road of professional organizing. But I was also the parent of my own sensory child. And one of the things I really noticed was as I was working with families, starting my own professional organizing business, I really noticed that there were many families out there that didn't intuitively know how to create structure and routine and visual aids for their families or their children. And that's really how it came to be. It was really a perfect combination of professional experience and personal interest and then my own personal experience.
Very interesting. Who is a sensory child?
Well, in my book, I really aim to define a sensory child as kids who are rigid, anxious, and distracted as a consequence of having autism, ADHD, anxiety disorder, or sensory processing disorder. And even though there are so many different sensory profiles, I actually found that many of the core challenges were similar, challenges with attention problems, with inflexibility, with being anxious and overwhelmed, and with having social and emotional challenges. And those are really the difficulties that many of these children and their parents are facing every day.
And, of course, these kids, I mean, the degree of their distraction and the challenges that the parents face differs from each of them, I presume.
Absolutely. Every profile, you know, can be so different. And this was something mm-hmm. that, you know, I experienced with my own child and as I worked with other families. The other kind of common thing I found with many sensory kids is that they are consistently inconsistent. So you can be in a cycle of time where your child mm-hmm. might seem more attentive and more regulated, and then all of a sudden you get into a period of time when your child is much more distracted and much more dysregulated and overwhelmed. So, you know, I really wanted to focus on creating tools that parents mm-hmm. could have mm-hmm. at the ready when they were getting into that cycle of more challenging behavior.
Is there such a thing that basically all child has a little bit of that sensory issue?
I do think that there's a lot of kids can have, you know, a minimal mm-hmm. level of either sensitivity to ways that they process information mm-hmm. or a tendency to be distracted or anxious. Mm-hmm. And for me, there's, you know, there's this line of does it, you know, I think when your child might need some support if they cross that line of
yeah.
it really impacting their daily experience. Is it impeding
right.
their
right.
way to move through their day?
Yeah.
You know, in a traditional way.
Right, right. Interesting. What challenges do sensory children and their parents face in their daily lives?
Well, you know, it's funny because I actually think it's often with sensory kids, it's the little things that end up being the big things.
Mm-hmm.
And they really are kind of constantly navigating a world that seems very overwhelming and full of distractions and not
mm-hmm.
set up in a way that really makes sense to them. And it really can be challenging in so many ways. For example, kind of communicating and connecting to experiences or
mm-hmm.
to people can be more challenging. Kind of simple activities can turn into major stress points. So, you know, going to a birthday party can end up being a really overwhelming experience that would, you know, might either shut a sensory child down or cause them to act out. It can be much harder for them to stay on task successfully, and they can have a lot of challenges with transitions, kind of switching from one activity to the next activity. And really, all of these challenges combined can really make for one really overwhelmed child and some overwhelmed parents.
Why do you write Sensory Child Get Organized?
You know, this is one of my favorite questions because
yeah.
I was not someone who grew up saying that I was going to write a book. That was never on my life plan, never.
Yeah.
And I'm sure my elementary school teachers are shocked. But, you know, for me, it really came down to the point of as I was learning how to support my own child, my own sensory child, who started having challenges when he was around 2 years old, I really felt like there was this gap between the clinical support we were eligible for because he was a higher functioning child
mm-hmm.
and really the everyday solutions that I felt like we were so desperate for, you know, like getting early on, like getting him to a birthday party, getting him to sit through dinner, getting him to get his hair cut or his nails cut, helping him to stay on task to be successful. You know, so many of those things were just so overwhelming for him, and for me it was like learning a new language. And yes, I was organized, but I really wasn't organized in a way that made sense to him.
Mm-hmm.
So really, on some level, I was a rigid, anxious, and distracted parent trying to raise a rigid, anxious, and distracted child. Unfortunately, we were not coming at it from the same place. So I really had to relearn this language and relearn this way of parenting and communicating with him. And, you know, as I started my professional organizing business and I started working with families that had sensory kids, I saw how many parents really did not intuitively know how to do that. They were really desperate for those answers of how do you set up your home to support your child? How do you support them on overwhelming things outside of the home? And that was really why I wanted to write the book. It was I wanted to write a how-to for parents who were having a hard time making that transition, like I had a hard time making that transition.
Yeah,
that was my goal.
Interesting. There are a lot of benefits from reading your book. You were very thorough. You got worksheets in the book, and obviously you have wonderful illustration as well. How can parents really grasp the book in terms of its thoroughness and apply it in their homes to make sure that they can succeed as well?
Well, that's a great question, Johnny, because I try to really set this book up as a resource book, as something that you could go to find something very specific. So I really did try to set it up in, you know, certain ways, and there's kind of three really distinct sections of the book. So who is a sensory child, helping your sensory child at home, and helping your sensory child out in the world. And I really wanted parents to be able to find what they needed, not feeling like they had to sit down and read the whole book in one sitting, but really use it as a resource. And I really, so I hope I my goal was to give parents and caregivers this overall map of how to support a sensory child. And one of the most powerful things in the book is something that you just mentioned, the sensory organizing worksheet. Mm-hmm. And the funny story about that worksheet is that was actually something I made for myself early on as I was learning how to support my own child. I really felt like I had to sit down almost every day and kind of check in with kind of where he was, what were the triggers, what were the things that were overwhelming him, what were the things that he loved and was really connected to, and how could I incorporate those into our day. And it really helped me restructure my own cognitive thinking about what parenting was going to be. And I think that's such a powerful tool for parents and caregivers to have access to something that helps them see where their sensory child is today and then take some, you know, step by step through creating supports to support, you know, their child on any given day. And that really was how I wanted the book to be read.
Well, it's easy to read, and of course it's coming from someone who is living the process versus, say, a scholar who's coming in and let me tell you how to do this. That's
right.
A little bit different. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I think one of the things that's so powerful is that I can bring as someone who's living this is I have the gift of having done it wrong a few times. And that ultimately actually becomes this wonderful tool because it's very clear when you've done it wrong versus when you do it kind of right when you're dealing with a sensory child. So I had the gift of really working off of the times that I didn't do it the right way and how it solidified for me what was the right way. And that was powerful for me to be able to share that.
Very interesting. The first thing that grabs me in your book is the fact that you have this 10 rules of parenting a sensory child. So I'd like you to share that 10 rules with all of us.
Sure. I'll start off, you know, I'm so glad you included this, Johnny, because this was one of my favorite pieces of the book, and I'm sure it was because it was the part that I needed the most personally. You know, when you have a child, you've read all these baby books about what having a child is going to look like. And if you have a child that has any sort of a diagnosis or rigid, anxious, or distracted tendencies, your experience will be very different than what you thought it was going to be. And that was a really hard transition for my brain to make. And so I really had to come up with a formalized kind of list of what the new parenting rules were going to be for a sensory child. And I'll share them with you quickly because it is such a, I think it's such a wonderful tool, and it's a subtle but powerful shift into, away from kind of traditional parenting and into what sensory parenting is going to look like. And one of the things I see so often is parents are living with a lot of guilt about, you know, this experience. So, you know, number one is your child's disorder is not a reflection of you or your parenting skills. Number two is letting go of guilt and anger. And number three is value the gift of the experience. And because so much of what you're going to learn as a sensory parent is you're going to have to go through things a few times in order to figure out how to do it. So value that gift because it's a wonderful teaching tool. And number four is initially parenting a sensory child is a counterintuitive process. I've worked with so many parents who feel like they should know this already, and you really shouldn't. There's this is not something that, you know, we come into the world knowing how to do, even parenting, you know, neurotypical children. There's an added learning curve when you are going to be parenting a sensory child. And number five is celebrate your child's strengths. You know, sensory kids are going to be in situations and maybe be around people that don't 100% understand them. So, you know, make sure that you do and make sure that you have a really solid understanding of what they bring to the table and what they're here to share with the world. So taking some time to do that. And number six is parenting is not a sensory child is a marathon, not a race. You know, there's going to be, there's kind of the big end goal to me is having your child grow up to understand who they are, what their strengths are, what their challenges are, and how they can support their challenges, and how they can, you know, really bring the best of themselves to, you know, to the world. And that really is, it's a marathon. And no sensory solution works forever. Many times our sensory kids who can be so bright will get bored with the system, so we constantly need to be tweaking it and changing it to keeping, you know, to make sure the system is fun and engaging mm-hmm. for our kids. Embrace, I mentioned this one early, embrace when you do it mm-hmm. all wrong. Mm-hmm. I think that's such an important one. We really can learn so much about what will support our sensory kids when we see something not work out. So it's just a wonderful tool. And be guided by love and understanding. That goes for, you know, as you're working with your own sensory child and as you're advocating for them out in the community with teachers, with caregivers, you know, really be guided by love and understanding. And then the last one is really pass it on, and that's that idea of mm-hmm. passing on those tools to your kids, those lifelong tools, so they understand what works for them and what's going to bring out the best in them as they grow into adults. And that those are kind of my top 10 parenting yeah. rules for parents.
Wonderful. One of the things that you covered thoroughly in the book, which I personally, for me again, because everyone that reads the book is going to get what they want out of it, certainly.
Right.
But for me, I think the biggest challenge, of course, is the fact that now you have this reality check as a parent, and then how do you observe the situation as you wanting to be aware where your child is or how is your child doing things and so forth, is to observe objectively. And you talk at length about that. So let us talk about that in terms of how do parents and caregivers observe objectively.
Well, you know, that is a great question, Johnny, and it is one of the hardest things to do because often when you're in that stage of learning how to observe your child objectively, you're also probably in the new place of understanding that your child has some challenges.
Right.
So that really makes it tough. So I think the best piece of advice I can give is really not to be coming from a place of too much empathy because it really limits your ability to advocate for your child. So when you're kind of too much in their experience or too judgmental of their experience, it really impacts your ability to objectively see what's going on. But when you shift into that place of compassion and, you know, realizing that your child is really asking for help or calling out for love, and when you have this underlying trust that you and your child will figure this out, you can really come up with objective observations that will help you create the right tools to support them. And there's a few ways you can do that if you want to create some structure around that, which I talk about in the book.
Mm-hmm.
You know, create some structure around observing your child by journaling and by really removing yourself from a space a little bit so you're seeing from a bird's eye view. You know, use calendar journaling. So there's a lot of different things you can do to help you get some information. Have good friends or family members be a part of the observation process. They might be seeing things that you might not be able to see. So it is such an important part of starting the process of setting up your home and your life to support your sensory child is getting an objective baseline of where your child mm-hmm. is mm-hmm. and what they need.
If you want to be an effective teacher, you got to be an effective observer because you're learning.
Absolutely. And the observing means really paying attention to the times they shine, right? Not just the times they're having a hard time. What are the times where they are, you know, shining and really connecting to people and the environment? And what does that look like? And why do you think they are so connected? Because those things are going to be as helpful as paying attention to what's hard for them.
Very true. Because those are the triggers that you can use to stimulate the path in this case. Yeah.
That's it. So, you know, those fascinations that they might have or those times of day where they're naturally calm, those can be really helpful for you as you create a schedule at home. You know, you mm-hmm. might plan to do certain things at a time of day where they're naturally calmer and more connected. Or if you might be able to bring in a fascination to a time where they have to sit still for a while. So it really will help you as you plan your life at home.
Wonderful. What is sensory organizing?
So sensory organizing to me means so many different things, but I'll share with you kind of my aha moment of how I understood what it was for me as I was learning how to support my own child. And one of my all-time favorite books and one that really helped me early on to understand, you know, my own child was a book called mm-hmm. The Explosive Child by Ross Green. And what I really loved about the book is his overall parenting philosophy, which was that kids will do well if they can versus kids will do well if they want to.
Mm-hmm.
And I really took that philosophy because I do really believe how powerful that is for rigid, anxious, and distracted kids. And I used that philosophy and I applied it to organizing. So when you create the structure and routines and the visual aids to the challenging times of day or the challenging tasks, then you really are setting up kids to do well because they can, you know, because you've given them the tools to do well. And for me, sensory organizing is a way to really formally observe and prioritize needs and then set up your space or your environment at home to tap into your child's innate strengths and really support their challenges. And I think one of the key shifts for me is mm-hmm. that sensory parenting is really about proactive parenting versus mm-hmm. reactive parenting. So this means that most of your parenting muscle is going to be flexed before an experience in the preparation, the visual aids, you know, the social skill training that sets up your sensory child to be successful. And that's really, to me, what sensory organizing is.
What I hear also, the biggest challenge is, in a way, you're creating a blueprint, but the blueprint don't necessarily have to be extremely detailed because it's not what you want to do in a way, but is what the child is capable of doing, but you are setting up opportunities for the child to explore and get better at certain things in some ways. And this is like normal parents sometimes, you know, we tend to have our blueprint imprinted on our child.
that's exactly it. So when you're taking the time as a parent to look at what will support your child, we're also shifting our own expectations.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah,
so
we're
meeting our child in the middle, and we're meeting them in a place of understanding who they are and understanding that their way and our way doesn't match.
Mm-hmm.
And that's so much of what the power is, Johnny, is really shifting the parental expectation in addition to supporting the child. So it really mm-hmm. is this two-pronged approach.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Wonderful. How does sensory organizing work?
Sure. Well, you know what? I think the best thing to do is mm-hmm. to give you an example of how it works and or really why it works. And I think, you know, even though there are so many different diagnoses that, you know, we might be supporting, be it sensory processing disorder, ADHD, or anxiety disorders, or autism spectrum disorders, you know, we know that those core challenges are similar. Attention mm-hmm. challenges, the inflexibility, anxiety, or executive functioning challenges, that ability to plan and organize to get something done. Mm-hmm. And really, to me, the beautiful thing about sensory organizing is that it is can be a huge support for all of those challenges. And it really helps parents have a plan around a time of day or task that we know might be overwhelming for our child. So, for example, in the book, one of the things I have is a homework plan for a child. And it's a little bit of a picture schedule, but it also has some written space for homework. So there's a homework session and then a break session and then a homework session and then a break session, and it allows a parent to fill in what the homework will look like and what the break will look like. And this is just a great example of a tool of sensory organizing that works to support so many different profiles. So, for example, this kind of homework plan would help a distracted child stay on task. It would help an anxious child know what to expect, which is something that is hard for kids that are anxious. It would help a rigid child know the breakdown of the desired and undesired activities. And it would help a child with executive function challenges, the challenges to organize something, it would help them have a map of a plan. So really, an example like that, the homework plan, it shows you that that's really a one-stop tool, and it really will support all of the rigid, anxious, and distracted behaviors we might be supporting at home.
Very interesting. Mm-hmm. What are the things that parents need to consider, though, when developing their sensory organizing system for the child?
Yes, I think this can be the challenging part, and I think there's a few things that parents have to consider. And I think the most important thing is not doing too much at once, not having too many changes at once. If we know kind of at the core for many sensory kids, having too much change to navigate at once can be overwhelming to them. We want to be mindful of that. And I think the other thing that I always tell parents to think about is to think about really prioritizing what's going to be the most impactful today. So if you sit down and as a parent and you say, okay, I'm going to think about our life right now, and our top three challenges are getting to school in the morning, getting that transition to school, sitting down for dinner, and going to bed. So those are the three times a day that you're going to want to focus on. And from those three times of day, you're going to pick one that's going to have the biggest impact. And for me, I would say the biggest impact would be that first transition of the day. And that's where I would start. I would start creating some systems and some routines and a visual guide for that transition, and really focus on making that run more smoothly. Because if our sensory kids are starting off the day in a better place, it can really impact the experience of the day. So I think it's those things. I think it's being mindful of not doing too many things at once. And when you do come up with your top three things you want to work on, start with the one thing that's going to have the biggest impact on your child and on your day as a family,
mm-hmm.
and start there. And give it about 2 weeks of working on one system before you introduce anything else.
Yeah, because you're creating a habit-forming system in a way.
That's exactly it, Johnny. One of the things that sensory kids are so good have is a strength for many of them is that route memory, right? So they
mm-hmm.
have an ability to memorize things as long as we're giving it to them with a visual format so they can visually see it and memorize this map that we're giving them. So that's
right.
Exactly right. We're helping them to build habits around times of day that we know are going to be hard for them so they can just, on some level, go on autopilot.
Right, right. And also, it's one thing to be thorough, but I think, like you were saying, be thorough at specific things, but not the whole day, simply because then it can be overwhelming and it becomes a chore versus a lifestyle blueprint.
That's exactly it. And I think this is what, you know, I always, you know, talk to parents about who might be really, really organized and have a super organized house. You know, I love that they have that ability to be organized, but when it comes down to using those skills with sensory kids, it's going to look very different.
Mm-hmm.
It's not going to be that detailed. What we're actually going to try to do is eliminate any excess stuff we're not going to need, right? So most of the time when you are doing when you're doing a plan for a kid, most of the time it can be whittled down to three steps, almost all of the time.
Keep it simple, in other
words.
That's
it. Keep it simple, right? Keep it simple. So eliminate any of the excess stuff that is not needed. Eliminate any distractions. And really simplify, and then create that visual guide, because that's what's going to help them memorize it and help them really be able to access that, you know, in a faster, easier way.
Right. And then once they comprehend a certain habit, certain things that they're very familiar with, and then that's when you can build on. Basically, you're approaching it with a layer approach where you build one layer at a time.
That's exactly it. And then how great is it when your child reaches the point where then they want to be involved in making it work better, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that, to me, is just this natural transition of, as kids get older and they have these habits and these routines that have worked for them, they might start to want to tweak them a little bit because they're starting to have a say and have an understanding of what works for them, and that's great. I mean, that's the goal. But they've got this solid base to work off of.
Right. Because we all ultimately, I guess, whether we're challenged or not, we all operate within our comfort zone. And so...
Well, that's it.
Yeah.
Yeah,
so
no, that's exactly it. And we want them to have the confidence to tap into their comfort zone, right, and work a system in a way that intuitively makes sense for them, as long as it's accomplishing the end goal.
The idea is to expand that comfort zone.
Right. Expand that comfort zone in small steps so it doesn't seem like too big of a shift for them.
Right. What is the biggest challenge in implementing the system?
So I actually think the biggest challenge is often for us parents who, you know, a lot of us parents, in the way that life is today, we kind of have this all or nothing thinking. So when we decide we're going to get our child organized or we're going to put in some supports in place, we come in and do a complete overhaul. And, you know, that can just be too much for sensory kids. And so I think really the hardest thing is keeping it small, you know, because we have this tendency, especially if we see one system work really well, right, the tendency is then going to be, well, I'm going to just overhaul my own house, my whole house, and it's going to work great. And you know, then you could have the opposite happen, where you have a child who's completely overwhelmed, and even though that one system worked well, you know. So I think it's really finding that the most challenging thing, I think, is finding that balance of just doing enough at a time where those small changes really are having a big impact and resisting the urge to overdo it.
That's right. You have to compartmentalize your system in some ways. It comes back to the perimeter of comfort zones.
Right. You know, a perfect example of this, and I know we've all just gone through this, is back to school, right?
Yeah.
So that kind of back to school mentality is that you're going to take 1 week before school starts and you're going to get your kid organized for the entire school year. Which is really not realistic, and it's especially not realistic for sensory kids. So really that first month of school for sensory kids, you're going to want to focus your energy on helping them learn their new routine at school, helping them know their teacher, helping them get familiar with people who they're going to be coming into contact with at school, and learning that new routine. And then you might shift into a place of helping them get materials home that they need. So are they getting the stuff that they need from school home and back again? And if there's challenges around that, you start creating systems for that. And then, you know, you might wait a few weeks and then you might move into the place of homework supports, because usually right around this time of year is when the homework and the academic load can start to increase. And so you might start finding that there's you know, some challenges around homework and sustained mental focus and prioritizing what needs to get done. So, you know, this idea that back to school is a one-stop shop is really not true. And for sensory kids and for many other kids, it really is a week-by-week process where you're just really seeing what they need right now based on their experience.
Right. Basically, what you're saying is that with the same process that you're doing here on a specific task, you're actually building that multi-layer one layer at a time.
That's exactly it. Right. So once they've really embraced and learned the basic layer, you're then adding on to that. Using the same format, right, so you're working off something that's already familiar to them, which is, all right, what's the plan? What's the three steps to our plan? And here's your visual guide to help you learn your new plan. So you're using those same strategies, but just, you know, incorporating a new routine or a new system.
Interesting. Does the system enhance the parent's connection with the child?
Yes, it does. And, you know, this is, to me, the biggest side benefit to learning sensory organizing, because you're really doing two things. You're showing, you know, we're showing our rigid, anxious, and distracted kids that we really appreciate their way of seeing the world, right? And that we value their experience. When we take the time to understand what their experience looks like and then tapping into a way to support that experience at home, we're just showing them that they matter and their way matters and that their way isn't wrong, you know, which is so often how sensory kids feel. So let me give you an example. You know, so many sensory kids who have been at school all day holding it together will come home ready to explode, right? They've managed to kind of go through a lot of overwhelming experiences and hold things together. So if you have a place in your home that is really set up to help them chill out and decompress for 20 minutes when they get home, whether that's a swing, whether that's, you know, a tent they crawl into with books and a flashlight, just by taking that one step of providing them a safe place to decompress, you're telling them that it's not unexpected that you should be overwhelmed. You know, you went through a day at school where you used your brain a lot and you had to be, you know, social with friends and you had to do a lot of uncomfortable things. So, yes, it's expected that you are going to come home ready to explode. So I appreciate that, and I want to give you a way to safely get regulated. You know, it's just an example of what the overall sensory organizing really tells our kids, and it tells them that their way is just as right as our way, and I'm going to show you that by incorporating your way into our house.
Well, we as adults need that from time to time as well to kind of chill out.
Absolutely. I think every parent should have their own escape and regulate place at home.
That's true.
Absolutely.
Very true. Your book talks about thoroughly organized in the house. Are the techniques applicable for outside the home as well?
Yes, and that to me is really the power of sensory organizing, is when you understand those core tools of kind of structure, routine, and visual aids, you can do them, you can use them anytime, anywhere, for almost any situation. And that comes in very handy for those experiences outside of the home, be it holiday gatherings, be it traveling, you know, be it a birthday party. Or even, you know, going to, you know, a concert, a music concert or something. So really those same tools can be used almost everywhere. And that, to me, is really one of the more powerful things about this.
Very interesting. What are your three tips to make traveling with sensory child a breeze?
Traveling can definitely be challenging for many sensory kids, because we're asking them to experience a lot of new things at once, right? They're mm-hmm. going to be away from their home. They're going to be in a new location. They're going to be seeing new things. They might be staying with new people. So we're really kind of changing a lot on them at once. So I think the first step is something that us parents have to do, because it often has to start with us. And
yeah.
So I think the first thing is really adjusting our expectations about what a vacation is going to look like. And a sensory vacation might look very different than a vacation that you might have had growing up. So it might be a vacation where you are not trying to cram everything into one day and, you know, going to an amusement park from 8 a.m. to 10 p.m. So you really have to adjust the expectations of what that might look like. And so I think that's the first one, is adjusting those vacation expectations. And then really preparing your sensory child about what the vacation is going to look like. You know, a map of what each day might look like, a map of some pictures of who they're going to be staying with, you know, if you're going to stay with family, what their room might look like, who they might be staying with, is it family, and, you know, really preparing them for some of those things that are going to be new for them. And the other thing I think, the last thing that I think is so important is trying to build in some consistencies. So some things that are part of their routine at home can mm-hmm. be made in a portable format as a way to have something that looks familiar to them. So, you know, bringing a portable version of their favorite toys and setting up, you know, a little quiet zone for them to be able to go to when they need to when they're on vacation. You know, building in a similar bedtime routine, building in a favorite show at a certain time of day. Those are the kind of consistencies that can be really grounding for them when they're experiencing mm-hmm. so much new. So kind of taking the time to make sure you build in some consistencies every couple of hours can really be a great tool.
Basically, you're saying that do some rehearsal, prep time before the trip at home. And then, mm-hmm. of course, what your goal is, you want to create familiarity so that they're away, but then it's they're away from home and then yet it's still home for them.
Right. Absolutely. So, yeah, so you want to take some time to do like a dry run or a rehearsal mm-hmm. at home of what
yeah.
this vacation is going to look like. And then when they're away, you've got some of those familiar things built into their day, which will help them feel connected and comfortable, and even having a daily, you know, a visual daily schedule that you can
yeah.
make for them every day where you plug in where those consistencies will be happening. So as they look at the day, they start to see what is familiar to them, and that's going to be very calming for a child that gets overwhelmed by too many new things at once.
Yeah, yeah, that's true. One of the greatest challenge, I think, as parents is that whether your child is a sensory child or not is the idea of like, oh, my God, he or she's leaving home pretty soon. How can I make sure that he or she is okay? That's part of life.
Mm-hmm.
In your book, you talk about leaving the nest, so to speak. And, of course, in a sensory child situation, this is even a greater challenge. So how does your system work in terms of giving the parents a peace of mind, and yet at the same time, this blueprint continue to develop and expand and truly help the child succeed?
Well, I think that's a great question, and I do think that leaving the nest idea is something that is a constantly evolving process. And one of the things that I knew early on is, like, you know, going on trips and seeing family and experiencing things outside of the home was something we were going to do, right? And because I felt like it was such an important part of my greater family's connection to life and to our relatives. And so I knew that even though it was going to be uncomfortable at first for probably all of us, we still
yeah.
had to do it. And we had to do it because it gave me confidence in my ability to guide my child, but as my child got older, it gave him confidence in his ability to handle new situations. So I think the biggest thing we can do as parents of rigid, anxious, or distracted kids is to make sure we're not dealing with it by not traveling or by not doing things outside of the home that we think are going to be hard. Because really the only way our kids are going to learn ultimately what works for them long-term is by doing it. And I think that's an ever-evolving process. And as your child is getting older, maybe you're pulling back on the support you're providing or having them a more active part of regulating themselves or regulating their own expectation of what a vacation can be. So I think it really is this evolving thing, with the ultimate goal, of course, being that parents feel like their kids have these intuitive tools that they can use if they need to, if they're in a place where they're going to be experiencing something that's going to be hard for them, having those intuitive tools of coping and making up a system to support it.
We've talked about this, about how thorough your book is, and you have kind of gave us a general idea on how to read the book, and the book is broken down into several sections. What is the best way for the reader to gain the most out of reading your book and applying the concepts from your book?
Well, you know, it's funny because I've heard from readers, and I've heard some people say, I sat down and read the whole thing.
Right.
And I've had some people say that I'm using it more as a resource book. And I really think that comes down to how that individual person processes and receives information best.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there are a few different ways you can do it. I think the most powerful way to see the power of sensory organizing is to do the sensory organizing worksheet that's in the book, and then pick one time of day to support and one time of day that you want to create a new routine around, create a new system around, and give that visual guide for. Because I think when parents see the start to finish of kind of observing the child objectively, connecting with what's hard for their child and connecting with what is fascinating to them or is a natural connection to them, and then taking that information and applying it to a tough time of day, then parents will get to see a full circle of kind of what that sensory organizing looks like. And most often they'll see a real positive impact from doing that. That challenging time of day won't be as challenging. And over time, a new habit gets created. So to me, that's it's a really nice way for readers to understand that full circle impact of sensory organizing when they can apply it to one thing in their child's life right now.
Very good. Talking about resources, you actually have an entire section in the book dedicated to resources. Can you kind of touch a little bit about them? Because a lot of times when you talk about a how-to book, people tend to be just talking about how they do things and not giving the reader opportunities to explore what's out there. And your book certainly did not do that, because you obviously loaded up with tons of resources for parents.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, that's a great point, Johnny, and I'm actually just having this realization right now as I'm talking to you as to why I really did that, and it must have been totally subconscious. But why I really did that is because, you know, my own child was a child that, you know, did not neatly fit into one diagnostic model. He was a child that had that little bit of everything profile, right? So I think my thinking was, not only did I want to give parents the resources of the organizing tools and the organizing products that I thought would help be so helpful in setting up a home to support their child, but I also wanted to make sure parents had, you know, the information and access to books and organizations that I thought were really helpful to all types of rigid, anxious, and distracted kids, knowing that not one sensory profile looks the same, and often you know, parents are supporting more than one challenging behavior, mm-hmm. right? So I really wanted to be mindful of making sure parents had everything they needed at their fingertips.
That's very good. Again, it comes back to the idea when you are observing, what you're doing is actually taking down notes, taking down information so that you can actually custom tailor a system. And that custom system is totally unique for that child and you.
Yeah, and that's definitely it, because our sensory kids are so unique and their profiles, you know, are unique to who they are as a person. And when you can tailor something that really you feel like really fits them individually and your family individually, mm-hmm. because this will ultimately support your whole family, that to me is a real gift. And it's a powerful tool, because what if you're a parent who has two sensory kids that look very different? You know, so if you're able to tailor something for each child using the same core strategies, you know, then you have something that can be a really wonderful tool for your family.
Right. Where can someone go to buy your book, get more information about you, and keep up with your latest happenings?
Well, I have a website, and the website is sensoryorganizing.com. And on my website, I have links to buy the books through Amazon.com, IndieBound.com, BarnesandNoble.com. So thankfully, there's, you know, hopefully a number of different ways to get books. It's also being carried in independent bookstores and Barnes & Noble bookstores. So if you'd like to walk into a store and actually buy it, there's a way to do that too. And on my website, I have information about my sensory organizing and my general organizing services, and I do a lot of presentations to schools and to teacher groups and at conferences. So I'm always updating that type of information about where I might be as far as doing presentations, and that's a very fun part of my business. And then I have a blog where I try to incorporate tools that I think parents can use, and I do that from my experience as, you know, the parent of a sensory child, but also as someone who continues to work with all types of families around organizing.
That comes back to the support group and sharing experiences and thoughts.
Yes, absolutely. You know, I think one of the most powerful tools for any of us is to know that we are not the only ones going through something, right? And so whenever I have an opportunity to speak in front of a parent group, what is always one of the best parts about the talk is the question and answers at the end when parents are sharing about their own experiences, and you can see other parents nodding their head, or, you know, you can see the sense of relief on someone's face when they realize that someone else is experiencing something very similar. And that, to me, is just so powerful. You know, when you are a parent who is raising a sensory child, you can feel like you are very isolated and that no one else is going through what you're going through. And, you know, really being able to get out there and connect with other parents, it will really help you normalize what your experience is.
Fantastic. What advice can you offer parents who are with a newly diagnosed sensory child?
I think that is that's a great question, because it is such a tenuous time often for parents as they're learning to understand and accepting what their parenting experience might look like. And I think the biggest thing to do is often the hardest thing, which is what I just talked about in terms of asking for help. And so, you know, learning what's available for you in your community as a parent who has a rigid, anxious, or distracted child, reaching, you know, finding out what support groups are around. And I think that the next part is really educating yourself, educating yourself on the behaviors that your child is exhibiting. And, you know, that really will start to give you this broader understanding, which will and then help, you know, in turn help you as you are learning how to support your child. And I think the last thing is really to trust in the process, because you know, you, I think parents initially feel like they're not going to figure this out, but, you know, they will figure this out, and they're going to be the best parent for their sensory child, and they're going to learn some amazing things
mm-hmm.
about themselves and about their child and about their entire family in the process. But, you know, just to trust that they, you know, that this will become familiar to them. It will become something that will become second nature, and it will be something that will teach them, you know, so many wonderful things. And I think that's a hard thing to hear when you're newly in this process, but
yeah.
As someone who's been through it, it really is true.
And most importantly, of course, you're not alone. There are a tremendous amount of resources out there and support group as well.
That's it. I mean, it really is amazing, just in 10 years, how far this has come and how many resources there are for families and how many parent groups and support groups. And, you know, there's just a wealth of information. And I think often the hardest thing is just, you know, taking that first step and getting started, putting yourself
Wonderful.
Out there.
Wonderful. By the way, we're coming close to the end of the hour. Since our show is about people, family, and living life, would you like to share a recipe for living with our listeners this morning?
I would love to. I love this concept, and I would love to share. I think for me, the gift of my experience as the parent of a sensory child, because there's been a tremendous amount of gifts for me, is that I've really come to believe that every challenging experience has hidden gifts for us, you know, opportunities to help us grow in completely unexpected ways. And that, to me, is kind of my new recipe for living. So as I'm walking into something that I might feel might be a challenging experience, if I stay open to the belief that there's going to be, you know, some hidden gifts and lessons for me, it becomes a much more rewarding experience.
Wonderful. That's very exciting. How has writing The Sensory Child Gets Organized impacted you personally?
Well, you know, I think it's helped me in so many ways. I feel really blessed to have had the opportunity to write something to help other parents. At my core, that is why I was so connected to psychology early on as a college
mm-hmm.
student, was
mm-hmm.
it was that ability to help people. And I had the opportunity to hopefully do that with my book. So that, to me, has been just a tremendous gift and has really impacted me personally in the way that I've been able to you know, to work with people, and it's broadened that opportunity for me, which I'm very grateful for. So I think really that would be the core for me. It's really just impacted, you know, my ability to do what I think is my work, which is to help families and to help
mm-hmm.
Kids and to help everyone be a little bit more connected and together in their day-to-day life experience.
Wonderful. So it truly has enriched your life as well.
Absolutely. You know, one of the biggest hidden gifts for me has also mm-hmm. been learning who I am, what my learning style is, what mm-hmm. organizing does for me, what it supports in me that's hard, right? And
mm-hmm.
because I was only able to get there because I was able to experience that with my child. So it has been a real gift all around.
Fantastic. Well, Carolyn, thank you for the wonderful recipe for living and for spending this hour with me on From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio. To all our listeners, thank you for being with us. Please join me next Tuesday morning. My guest will be Kathy Borey, author and speaker who works tirelessly as an advocate for people with Alzheimer's and their caregivers. Kathy and I will be discussing about her memoir titled The Long Hello. For additional information about this show and future shows, please go to From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio Show. Thank you for listening and have a blessed week. Carolyn, it has been a pleasure. Thank you again and have a blessed week.
Thanks, Johnny. My pleasure to be here.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.